And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. It's a very strange Monday, isn't it? We're sandwiched between a weekend, pretty nice weather-wise. Hope you got some of your activities in. And then we got the Independence Day holiday tomorrow. It's very, very strange. And we're running into more and more people who are not working today. If you're one of them, God bless you. I'm glad you were able to work out. For a lot of us, though, a regular work day, and certainly we're happy to have you here with us on It's Your Turn today. We have a lot of guests. We're going to be talking about a wide range of subjects. There's not only a bicycle rodeo coming up in the city of Butler, but they're going to be giving away bikes, a whole bunch of them, free to kids. We're also going to be talking later today with a representative from the Butler Area Street Machine Association. It's an area car club. Cliff Rumbaugh, vice president, will be with us. And they have a big car show coming up tomorrow, 4th of July. And we have some other guests as well. But our first guest is sitting right here across the console from me. And I have been looking forward to chatting with Peter Anno for a few months, because he made a trip this late winter, early spring, to Antarctica. And wait till you find out why. Peter Anno, nice to meet you. Nice to have you here with us today.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
I found out about your trip from your father, who wrote me a note and said, my son Peter was in Antarctica. How about that? He wouldn't have had to go any further, and I would have been interested in chatting with you. But then he told me why you were there, which was?
To run a marathon.
To run a marathon. Now, I have great admiration for anybody that runs a marathon around here, whether it's Pittsburgh, Boston, in your backyard. But to go to Antarctica to run a marathon, Peter, I'm sure you must have had friends and relatives who were questioning your sanity.
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, Pittsburgh was my first marathon. I ran back when I was in high school, a junior, actually, at Seneca Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a group of runners that have the kind of goal to go run a marathon in every continent. So there's a group out of Boston that organizes a race every year, and it goes down to Antarctica. And so I got on the wait list. They only allow about 200 people a year because of environmental reasons. They only let so many people on the area at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
There's some
Makes
scientific
sense.
Bases.
Yeah.
And so I signed up to go, 2 years ago, and this past March is when I went.
My engineer tells me I need to have you pull your chair in a little bit closer to
okay.
that microphone. That's grand. Oh, that's perfect. That'll keep everybody happy.
All right.
So you were there this past March.
That's correct. So I'm in California now, but I flew to Atlanta, which is about 5 hours, and then you go down about another 9 or 10 to Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the group all sort of came in, because there's a lot of people from all over the world actually on the trip. And then from there, you take another 2-hour flight down to the city that's the farthest south in South America, actually the world, I think they like to call it, is Ushuaia.
Tierra del Fuego.
See, so you board the, we had 2 separate boats there, actually, and then you have to go across Drake Passage over to the continent, and that takes about a day and a half. You know, you could go faster, I'm sure, on a ship that, or if you didn't care about burning more fuel, but we took our time. We actually had really good weather. Drake Passage is historically one of the worst traveling areas just for seas and storms, and we actually had it really good. So
is that named for Sir Francis Drake?
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so we got over there after a couple of days, and they always had some side trips for us, but everybody's reason on the trip, unless they were one of the significant others of somebody that was running, is they had a marathon, and you could do a half marathon. And
mm-hmm. Wow. A little bit about yourself. First of all, you and your family are from Harmony, right?
That's correct, yes.
Your parents still live there?
That's right, yep. They're still in the house I grew up in. We moved here in 73. My dad was an airline mechanic for, what was US Airways at the time. And when Well, we started with Mohawk, and they got bought by Allegheny. So we moved down, and I grew up and lived in that house since I was 3 and a half. And so my sister's has since moved to Austria. She married a guy from Vienna and lives there with her three kids. And so actually she's over visiting my parents now for the holiday, so I meet them here sometimes with her daughter Vanessa, and her son Paul are over visiding.
So you live in California now.
Correct. So I'm out in Redondo Beach.
Your sister lives in Vienna.
Correct.
Austria.
Yes.
Vienna. Austria. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, sometimes more with a...
I've seen it on the map. Yeah. I didn't know how to pronounce it. And your parents, it's Randy and Sharon, right?
Correct, yes.
They're in harmony.
Yes.
You're a far-flung family these days.
Yeah, now we are, yes.
Yeah, wow. So I want to talk more about Antarctica, obviously. Sure. That's why you're here. But what do you do, Peter, besides run marathons in Antarctica?
Well, there's a bunch of scientific stations down there then. And so we actually were on a Russian scientific vessel. So as I had said, there was kind of two ships, and we would, in order to not overly impact any area now that they're very concerned about the environment, and we would go to one area where they knew there were a lot of penguins or seals. And so you would take a lot of side trips. So we would go down, and on this ship, there was about 100 of us, and then there was about 40 crew, mostly Russian. We didn't see them too much. They were kind of just steering the ship and piloting and working the engine room and everything. So every day in the morning or the afternoon, you would get off the ship, and they had a little zodiacs that they would use a crane to lower on and off the deck of the main ship, and they kind of like you'd see the SEAL team use, and we
was
would
that like a little like a rubber raft or
correct.
Something
basically a little rubber raft, a little, you know, stronger to in case we were bumping into icebergs and stuff. And so you would kind of either go around the bay that we would pull into the day, or we would go right up on shore and then get out and do a little hike, which the area is a lot of mostly rocky, and it wouldn't be too cold while we were there. It was probably in the 20s or 30s. But
was this in any way related to your job? Because you're a chemist by trade, aren't you?
By trade, I'm a chemist, yes. But I've been running for a long time, and a lot of both of the last few companies I worked with are nutritional and supplement companies, and we're involved in the fitness industry.
Oh,
so
naturally, that ties in with running, yeah.
So, but I'm not sponsored or anything by them. I kind of just pick this up as sort of my side hobby to see the world and travel around. And so, I'd been running ever since high school. So I've done more than a few marathons now, and this is just one of the ones.
Did you run cross country at Seneca Valley?
I did, and then I ran at Geneva College when I went there too. So cross country and track, yeah.
That's where you got your undergraduate degree?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That's where you majored in chemistry, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I have a chemistry and biology degree from there, and I started out with a business, so I finished that as well. But my career is focused more on the chemistry and biology.
When I first shook hands with Peter, by the way, if you're joining us a little bit late, listeners, on It's Your Turn Today, welcome, please. It's the Monday, July 3rd edition, and my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Peter Anno, visiting with us today. When I shook hands with Peter before we went on the air today, I said, you are the first person, to the best of my knowledge, that I've ever spoken with who's been to Antarctica. And Peter said, well, my dad was there, actually. And I said, you're kidding. So your father was in Antarctica?
That's true, yeah. He'd signed up for the Navy when he was 17, and one of those times when you could join just for a couple years. And I think he got in, and as you had said to me as well, you know, join the Navy, see the world. And that's what they did. They sent him on a ship, and he did a round-the-world cruise. And so he has some old slides that he showed us of, you know, him with some penguins and the rest of the crew that was with them, they're back on the ice. And so they looked like they were having a good enough time. It's just one of those places I don't think I'd want to spend the winter at, but we were
nice,
there.
Though, to think that you were able to visit one of the places where your dad was.
It is. And I think he saw a little more of some of the original settlements and stuff. I mean, it's been, you know, 30 years since he was there, but they do still have a lot of bases. You know, being on a Russian ship, we had ended up at the Russian base, and the Chinese base in Uruguay is another country right down there that had a base nearby. And so some of those scientists will stay for the year. We were there right at the end in March. It's their fall, and so they're going into the winter where a lot of people won't leave for a few months because you can't get the ship back in there. Actually,
yeah,
our ship
freezes solid.
Yeah, our ship was going to make one more trip down, and then they were going up to the Arctic, actually. But, we were there. There's actually a small little airport, so, you know, they use it mostly for the military and or scientific reasons.
Mm-hmm. So you, everybody met from around the world in Buenos Aires.
Correct.
A little bit different than meet me in St. Louis. Meet me in Buenos Aires. And then when you flew down to the tip of South America, you flew over then the Straits of Magellan. You didn't have to cross them?
We had gone down, and I'm not actually...
Because I heard that was a rough passage, too.
Yeah, but, you know, sort of through there. We kind of just got on the ship right there and sort of took the ship straight down south.
Across the Drake Passage.
Drake Passage,
Sir Francis Drake. Wow. You're reliving history here, Peter.
Yeah, and again, like I said, I know we had I had a little motion sickness patch on, and I took a pill, and there was a few people that got sick, but... coming back, it was rocky and, you know, somewhat stormy, but I know, it, you know, if you get the chance, I'd say tell everybody to go, but, you know, it was a couple days on a boat.
Your Dramamine, huh?
Yeah.
So, a few basic questions about Antarctica.
Sure.
First of all, many people may not realize, I read this somewhere, and I probably didn't know it before that either, Antarctica is actually a landmass that's covered with ice in many places. A tremendous amount, probably miles of it.
Correct.
But as opposed to the Arctic, the North Pole, well, there isn't land. That's
right.
Just ice, right?
Right.
And
I understand it too.
Yeah. There's some islands up there, but there's no land mass like there is in Antarctica.
Correct.
And I was looking at some of the pictures you brought with you, and you can see rocky outcroppings where you were, at least. Not everything is ice covered.
Correct, yeah, and it's, you know, I think I've read or heard, you know, it's not that it snows all the time. We had a few little flurries, but it's just, it's usually so cold the snow never melts, and mm-hmm. So you see it all around, year round.
And you were there in the fall when it wasn't too bad.
Correct, yeah, we actually got a good dose or a good time we were there for the weather, too, yeah, I mean, because storms will roll in. We had a couple days where it was overcast, but for the most part, we had clear skies, and so you could be on the deck of the ship in shorts and a T-shirt if it wasn't too windy.
You'd have to watch out for sunburn, though, right?
Yeah, and that's true, and that's the other thing, you know, people don't think about, or they'd warned us. They said, you know, if you're out or even if you're just on the little Zodiacs or going around for a hike, you really need to wear sunscreen, and in between the sun and the wind, it's, you know, you don't think about it till you're already burnt.
The UV rays can get through the Earth's atmosphere a lot easier at the pole, either pole for
correct.
That matter.
Correct, yeah. And you're down, where we're, mm-hmm. we were out, you know, side, and there's no coverage, there's no trees or anything, you're just going to get, the sun on.
I guess I just wasn't thinking it through when I asked you if there were seasons. Yeah, it's just reverse from us.
Right.
Our seasons are kind of like reverse to Australia, because we're... at least close to the same latitude, you know, we're above the equator, Australia's below. But the South Antarctica, of course, is the South Pole, just like the North Pole, although there's no land there. Much of the ice does melt in the springtime, and you can take passage through there. The Russians have done that for a long time from Murmansk and some of their other northern bases. There were people, even back to the Age of Discovery, who tried to find a route to Asia by going through there. They went at the wrong time, or they didn't make it, one of the two.
Right.
So you have, in Antarctica, there is at least a milder season in the spring and summer.
Correct, yeah, and we were kind of around the areas, and a lot of people, you know, there's a good book by about Shackleton, who got stuck down there for a little bit, and he ended up going over to St. George Island, which is where we were for some of the time, too, and you can see, actually, a lot of, there's some old whale skeletons and old whaling huts that used to be, you know, the main reason for a lot of people going down there. And mm-hmm. they actually some seal areas, too.
So they're going about, whale oil and blubber and stuff?
Yep. And actually there's some fur seals that were almost hunted to extinction for a while. And so they're actually off the list now, too. They've come back, and there's a bunch of treaties that, you know, protect the limitations on hunting the seals and stuff, but we did get to see a lot of those down there.
Shackleton's boat, refresh my memory, his boat got iced in, totally frozen in, and the men feared they were lost, and Shackleton took off with, I don't know, at least a few other guys, on his, you know, what seemed like a fool's errand to try to find help, and he made it.
It's true. Yeah, there's a great story there about the book and about, you know, their perseverance. You know, they just had a little dinghy and, you know, rowing across, you know, dead reckoning and spying by the stars. And, yeah, they got out. They were fortunate enough to make it back and get some help and go rescue the other guys again.
Amazing story. Yeah. So you saw seals?
Yeah, a lot of seals.
Penguins?
Lots and lots of penguins, yeah. They're, mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, not on our trip, but, you know, the seals are, that's their native habitat. Mm-hmm. And then, so they're used to people, not used to people, where, you know, you don't want to get too close to them because they have pretty sharp teeth.
And don't they swim and mate and raise young in different places? I don't know, they kind of migrate, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of them. And so you could see a lot of the penguins were molding. They were just kind of on the rock outcroppings there.
You know, I was looking through your pictures, and I saw this one penguin. I almost commented to you, but I was so fascinated, I zipped on to the next picture. It looked like his feathers were falling out. So
right.
That's what was happening.
Yep. And so they just sit there, and we're, you know, they kind of, you know, counsel you not to go up and bother them too much, because for mm-hmm. a month they'll just stand there, rain, sleet, or snow, and their feathers kind of go out, and so they don't go in or out of the ocean, and they get a whole new set of feathers.
Wow.
And
that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
pretty amazing stuff.
You could get really close to them, and, you know, again, they tell you not to touch them or disturb them too much because they don't want to get them used to people, but they would come up, and they, you know, they've hopped on, pecked at a few people in our troop, or our group, tour group as well.
So did you run the full 26 miles?
I did. So one of the things is, you know, like you had said, it's kind of rocky, and it's almost like a trail road or something. The day we were there, we had pretty good weather. Again, it wasn't too cold. You know, I just needed a long sleeve shirt and a vest, and as long as I had my hat and gloves on. But we kind of went from the Russian base over to the Chinese base and back, which was, you know, about 4.5 miles. So we had to do that round trip a couple of times. It's not like they sent us out across the snow and we just ran one big loop, but because of...
Is it well marked?
It is.
I hope so.
We weren't going to get lost in there, you know, in order to keep the limited impact. So you would usually see people coming back as you were going out on mm-hmm. on the trail the other way. So, you know, it took me longer than some of my old races, but I hadn't... run as practice as much as I had. It's not super, you know, any more difficult, but
I get out of breath just listening to you. I mean, a marathon anywhere is, you know, incredibly rigorous, but to do it in Antarctica, for goodness sakes, wow.
Yeah.
I have great admiration for you. How many marathons have you run?
That was my 70th, actually.
Get out.
So I've run one in every state in the U.S. So
your aim is to run a marathon on every continent.
Yeah, so that's
how are you doing on that?
Well, I've done one in Europe. I went to run one in Vienna with my sister, and not to segue too much from the Antarctica theme of the interview, but one of the funnest ones I ever ran was in France. So to get back, I did one in Costa Rica, and I ran a what they call a ultra, because it was further than a marathon, in South Africa. So you could say I've done three or four, depending on how it is. But I've never been to China or Australia myself. So there's one they run partly on the Great Wall of China. And so I'd like to get to that someday. But I'm at three or four, and then the one in France that I really had a good time at, they didn't even give you Gatorade or water. There were wine stops, actually, during that race. Mm. And so you could stop as much as you wanted, but there's a time limit on all those races, too. So
was that in the wine-growing region?
It was. It was down in Bordeaux. It's called the Meadow Marathon. And so that's the only other one I've done with a whole tour group, and it was with this marathon tour group out of Boston, and it's in September. But I had a great time. It was a good race.
So Europe, Africa, Antarctica, obviously the United States.
Yes, yeah. So I still got to go to China, Australia, and South America.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, Costa Rica.
Yeah.
If you cheat a little bit, no, I guess that's Central America.
There's an argument.
So you got three more to go, huh?
Yeah.
Do you have three more marathons left in you, Peter?
We'll see. You know, I've had my hips seen better days, but I think I can eventually get there, yeah.
Wonderful story. It really is. It's terrific. Yeah. Now, did you early in life dream about, because, you know, this sort of world travel is just, I mean, it's mesmerizing to so many of our listeners. I'm sure that listening to you say, well, I haven't made it to China yet, but I've been to South Africa, France, you know, Costa Rica, Antarctica, for goodness sakes. When did you realize that you were going to be a traveler?
Probably sometime after I got out of college, actually. I moved to Colorado, and then since I had done a couple marathons, I did Pittsburgh and Cleveland, and then I went down to Richmond, and then when I moved out to Colorado, it was kind of just sort of my excuse to see other states and travel and keep me out of trouble, and I always tell my mom that's sometimes why I'm broke and single, but, you know, it kept me busy and in pretty decent shape, you know. So being in Colorado is a nice place to be to train because you're already
high altitude.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, just walking around or doing, you know, regular intramural activities would keep you in shape. And then, so, yeah, about, well, gosh, that's been 20 years now. So I do, you know, 4 or 5 marathons a year, and eventually I got through all the states.
So you've been to all 50 states?
Yep.
Including Alaska and Hawaii.
Correct, yeah.
And you're only missing 3 continents.
Yeah, so...
Including Australia. I don't know whether some people don't even count Australia as a continent, but...
That's true. So, yeah, you know, and I tried to do it, you know, and save money that, you know, I had a friend that was in the Army in Hawaii, so I went and stayed with him, and he ran the race with me, and I did the Alaska Marathon through a team and training organization, sort of as a fundraiser for Leukemia Lymphoma Society. So, yeah, I got up there... Gosh, 7 years ago, I guess.
Yeah, you better start checking in with the Guinness Book of Records people.
Well, there's a few people on, like, this trip to Antarctica, you know, that was all their, it was their last continent, and they've got a little more, I think, time and money than I do. So
they've hit all yeah. all 7. Is it still 7 continents, by the way?
It is.
Because, you know, they keep changing these things. But, you know, it's more, less planets now than we learned when we were kids.
Well, there's talk that there's another continent. They're counting, like, New Zealand or something.
It's really?
Separate.
Tasmania.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the planet thing, you know, they said 5 or 6 years ago that Pluto wasn't a real planet.
Right.
And then they changed their mind again. Some group of astronauts said, those guys are full of hooey. Pluto is a planet. So, you know, who knows?
I still, that's how I learned it.
I did, too.
I count it.
Yeah. 9 planets and 7 continents.
Yes. Yeah.
It's an amazing story. It really is. Realistically, how long do you think... You know, they keep asking Tom Brady how long he can play football. You've run 70 marathons, Peter Anno.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of near the end, I think. I've kind of pseudo-retired, I always say, so.
Mm-hmm. But you do plan to do those other 3 continents.
If I can get around to it, I'll...
You can hope
yeah.
so, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking with Peter Anno. He is, well, he's originally a resident of the Harmony area, mm-hmm. graduate of Seneca Valley High School, who... was in Antarctica, that's hard to say, by the way, Antarctica, this past March, running a marathon. How long were you there altogether?
So altogether, we were there about a week, about 7-8 days. So mm-hmm. 2 days down, 2 days back, but we had a little short excursion, went to a couple of different islands over there, again, only on the main continent for 2 days. But again, we weren't actually allowed to stay on the continent. There's no, like, hotels, or we didn't camp out.
You just stay on the boat.
Correct, yeah. We'd stay on the boat and then take those little Zodiac rafts over and then do a little exploration for a couple hours and then head back.
Now, this was a Russian base, did you say?
Well, the ships were Russian, and the crew mostly was from Canada. It was called One Ocean Exploration. They were just a group that this tour organization charters to, I say, direct, you know, the activities and the organization of the excursions on the boat.
Does anybody own Antarctica, or is it kind of like the moon, where it's claimed internationally but by no specific country?
Correct, and I think that's what my dad had asked me, and it's an interesting scenario. How it's set up is it's sort of nobody owns it. There's an international Antarctic treaty that has been established. I think the Argentinians tried to sort of establish residency. They had a whole school set up, you know, in between having some people get married there and have a few people born there. They were trying to sort of claim part of that area as their own. But there's actually just an international treaty sort of agreed upon by all the nations that have a presence there, such as the U.S. and Australia, and they would be kind of on the other side of the continent from where I was. Mm-hmm. But basically, they, police one another in a sense that, like, if we had seen somebody doing something, you know, what you'd say, illegal or that, you know, detrimental, we could report them, but then they would be responsible party for them would be their own home country. So if we saw the, you know, Russians doing, you know, doing some digging or drilling, we would report them, and then Russia would have to...
Pretty amazing that they were able to work out an international treaty. I just happened to be reading last week, actually, a brief synopsis of African history and the colonial period. European powers just raped Africa. They all had colonies there, and I didn't realize it. The Germans had the colonies there. The Dutch, the British, obviously, the French, Portugal. They all had colonies in Africa. They just carved it up.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, like the I was saying, there's the Uruguayans, the Chinese, and the Russian are all right by each other. And then the airport there is run by the Chileans own the airport. But everybody's kind of agreed upon. I think that there's not allowed to be any drilling or mining there right now. And so it's set up sort of as a scientific, and there's certainly some people that have some military presence there that are close, like Argentina. But
Chile and Argentina would be the two closest countries, probably.
From this side, for sure, yeah.
That bottom end of South America goes down there pretty close.
Absolutely, yeah. And so the Australians can get there from the other side, but if you wanted to go there, I think it's even a longer boat trip across. But
I feel like I'm playing Risk.
It is, yeah. It's a big geography.
big geography map I'm seeing in my head here. Now, I have a friend who is a pretty good friend of mine, actually, Ole. He's from Norway. He's an American citizen now, but he's a native of Norway, and his hometown was above the Arctic Circle. So he experienced the land of the midnight sun and the total darkness, of course, in the wintertime. You know what my question is going to be. Do they experience that in reverse in Antarctica?
Yes, sir. Yep.
So when you were there, it was March. Were you kind of like between seasons, no trouble?
Yep, no trouble at all, right in the middle for us. So, yeah, it worked out great. Almost didn't notice the difference.
Mm-hmm. But had you been there either in their winter or their summer?
Correct.
It would have been
right, a lot more
dark
daylight.
All the time or daylight all
the time. Yeah, a lot of people like to go around, you know, would be our Christmas, and then they get a lot more. It's a little bit warmer and then a lot more daylight.
Mm-hmm. That would be very strange to deal with.
Yeah.
I think that would be probably as difficult to adjust to as the cold, really.
Yeah, yeah. I got a little of that when the Alaska race that I did was in June, which is summer solstice right up there. So it would get dusk, you know, at 10 p.m., you know, and you'd get a little, then by 3 a.m., the sun be coming out again.
Yeah, very strange. Yeah, very strange. Antarctica, wow. So what airlines do you take when you're flying to? Well, you flew as far as Tierra del Fuego, right?
Sure, yep. Yeah. So Delta goes down to Buenos Aires, and for Buenos Aires, there's just a local Argentinian air.
You can take Delta from the U.S. right to Buenos Aires?
Yep, yep. And then
from where? Dallas? Miami?
I took it out of Atlanta.
Atlanta?
Their home
really?
Place. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, Atlanta to Buenos Aires nonstop.
It's a long haul, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost 10 hours. Yeah.
Due south.
Yep, almost straight south. Yeah.
Wow. Your compass would be going bonkers, your wristwatch, huh?
Yeah.
And then the local airlines from there to...
Correct. That was about another two-hour flight, so a few hundred miles.
Mm-hmm. Didn't realize, actually, it was quite that close.
Yeah.
Is that a military or a charter? Or?
No, just a commercial.
Really?
Yeah, they've got a small little airport down there with, you know, six or seven gates, and there's a big enough city down there. They have a large enough presence with the military and, I think, just exporting things out of the... and South Pole and southern Argentina, that they've got a town of about 50,000, probably about the size of Butler, but, you know, they've got schools and people that do stay there in that town year-round. They actually set it up. There was a nice little museum of when they used to send people down there when there wasn't a town for a prison.
Well, that's the way Australia started.
Right.
I mean, it didn't start that way. There are Aborigines and Maori there, but the British used it as a penal colony.
Right.
They sent their worst...
The
worst convicts down there for almost 100 years. Yeah. So are you going back?
it's not on my list anymore. You know, I would, but you know, it was kind of expensive, and you're off the grid. I mean, that's the one thing people. We could send some emails from the ship, and you do. I know some people had their phone. You could pick up actually cell service towers from the Russians and the Chinese when we got on that base on their land mass there. But the whole Drake Passage and when you're out, I didn't get emails or phone calls for a week. You know.
Can you hear me now? No.
No. Can you hear me now? That's true. No. So, you know, it'd be nice, but again, you know, that it's a
You've done it.
Big world, and yeah.
You have other places to see, other places to explore.
Yeah, I'm not a big boat person, and you're on the boat, you know. And, you know, they have those little capsules, like kind of like the Tom Hanks movie. There's an orange little boat we'd all get into, but that water's cold, and, you know, you go over, you better hope somebody comes and gets you.
I don't know whether when you first said Zodiac, I wasn't quite sure what you were talking about.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know whether I could get into one of those little things.
Oh, I'm sure you could. I mean, the most those ever went, you know, it was a couple of, you know, maybe a mile from the ship or so, you know, but, you know, there's...
Hey, look, maybe Chesapeake Bay, I could do that.
Well, we did, we got...
Antarctica, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I mean, and we got bumped by a whale once, you know, we're down there, you know. Here.
More Dramamine, please.
Yeah, so...
Hey, would you do us a favor? If you get to your other continents, or if you get to run in China... Would you come back and talk to us about it?
Absolutely.
It's fascinating. You're a great travelogue, human interest story. You really are.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah. Peter Anna visiting with us. And, oh, say hi to your mom and dad for me, too.
Okay. They're good people. Yeah, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
They're good people. They even sent me a copy of one of your pictures.
Yep, here. Yep. I see that. My sister Jennifer and her daughter and son Paul and Vanessa are listening, too. So, hi, guys.
Okay. Well, again, nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Really mean that. Really.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
And thanks, Randy, too.
You're a good host. My folks like listen to you, and they catch you with Kate in the mornings a lot.
Yeah, that's good to know. More to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a break. We're going to be talking about there are some folks going to be giving away bicycles, to a bunch of them, I believe. We'll get the details on this. They're calling it a bicycle rodeo. It's this coming weekend here in the city of Butler. So I have all the details on that for you. And still later on the program today, Butler Area Street Machine Association is having a big event tomorrow on Independence Day. We'll tell you about that, too. More to come on It's Your Turn here on WISR. We will be back in just a moment or so.
If you're tired of being fed to death by the big banks, now is a great time to join the Butler Armco Employees Credit Union. With more free services like checking, online banking, mobile banking, and check deposits by phone, along with the best rates around on autos, home equity loans, and mortgages, you'll quickly see why over 26,000 members have chosen BAECU for their banking needs. It's never been easier to join, so stop in or join online at BAECU.com. You and your wallet will be happy you did. BAECU is federally insured by NCUA and is an equal opportunity lender.
The late summer boredom fell hard on Thomas and Abigail Wyatt, and to lighten it, Thomas decided they needed to head to Gettysburg, PA. Friends thought them misguided. Upon their arrival, they found a food scene with dishes unexpected and fanciful, warm welcoming people, and a micro distillery so impressive, Thomas would proclaim its drinks the nectar of the gods. This was a whole new Gettysburg.
Make your own history. Visit DestinationGettysburg.com.
A great holiday starts with great sleep. The kind you'll get every night on a Beautyrest mattress. The only one featuring Beautyrest pocketed coil technology for conforming support and motion separation. Sleep better for less during the Beautyrest 4th of July savings event. Get a free box spring or savings of up to $800 on a Beautyrest smart motion base. Hurry in today. Find a retailer at beautyrestretailers.com.
Each month, Radio PA gives you a chance to send a question or comment to Governor Tom Wolf during our Ask the Governor program. Your input can make a difference, just like Thomas in Center County, who was concerned about the state prison population counting toward the governor's proposed $25 per capita fee for state police coverage.
Prison populations included in these township formulas, is there a way to offset that, or is that just the way it's going
to be? I think Thomas makes a really good point. That's not right. So I will make sure that at least in the proposal that I make,
I will modify that we don't count the prison population in that. So I think Thomas makes a very good point. Thank you for that good question.
You can be a part of the next Ask the Governor program by going to pamatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. You can also email the program directly at askthegov@pamatters.com. That's askthegov, G-O-V, at pamatters.com. Ask the Governor is an exclusive presentation of Radio Pennsylvania and pamatters.com.
Welcome back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. Fascinating to talk with Peter Anno there. Trip to Antarctica. Wow. That's a little further away than Shakora, isn't it? Yeah. Hey, we have several folks with us on the next segment of the program to tell you about a pretty neat event that's coming up this weekend here in the city of Butler. They're going to be giving away a bunch of bicycles, a whole bunch of bicycles, as a matter of fact, at a bicycle rodeo. Let's go around the table and say hello to our guests. A member of Butler City Council, Kathy Klein, is here. Kathy, good to see you.
Good to see you, David.
Same. Also, Jamie Lee Gearing is here. Jamie, hi.
Hi, how nice to be back again.
You're involved in this bicycle rodeo, too?
I sure am.
Yeah. And also, a good friend of long standing, with whom I've chatted by telephone, by email and everything else, but not very recently in person. Denny Hofstein. Denny, good to see you.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Can you move your chair a little bit closer for me? That's grand.
Okay,
that's
thank
perfect.
You.
Jamie, tell me about the Bicycle Rodeo. That's the name of the event, right?
It is. It's the Bicycle Rodeo. Denny has actually been doing this for many years. It was on a bit of a hiatus for a while, but he approached us earlier this year saying that, you know, he was ready to start doing it again, and we were more than happy to jump on board. So July 9th, which is this coming Sunday, down at the Butler Farmers Market, located on the island right across from Rotary Park, from 1 to 5 in the afternoon, we are going to have a great community event and handing out, we're hoping, about 100 bikes to local city kids so that they have something fun to do this summer. And lots of great vendors are showing up. We've got the police department, the fire department, all sorts of fun stuff for the kids and the community to really come together. So it's been fantastic being a part of this.
Kathy Klein, city on board with this?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to think that the city's on board with all of our, you know, community, especially parks and having to do with our children and stuff. I mean, I can't recall a time that I know I personally have never not been on board with, you know, that, but absolutely, yeah.
Denny, I can remember you spearheaded this for many, many years, did you not? It was pretty much an annual event for a while.
14 years.
Yeah, and you used to have it down at the playground, right?
Right.
Yeah.
The problem that ended was the playground got sold.
That's right, the playground's not there anymore.
There's no more playground.
Yeah. So the event's going to take place at the Butler City Outdoor Farmers Market.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be giving away bicycles?
I have approximately over 100 presently, and they're all safety checked by a great retired gentleman by the name of Carl Sloop. He safety checks and repairs all the bikes as best we can. We accept used bikes annually, and all the nice people that I have met donating bikes, it's amazing. I mean, and what's interesting, each bike has its own individual story.
Hmm. So how do kids get a bike? Do you sign up, or are there qualifications, or what's the deal?
Well, here's what's nice. The Butler Lions Club's going to register all the kids. It's age 5 to 15. Let me just interject one thing.
Sure.
418 Hazel Avenue, Denny Hofstein Auto Sales. The bikes can be dropped off yearly. Used bikes, good or bad. Now, this event, we're accepting new bikes for the donation. Mm-hmm. But the Butler Lions Club's going to register all the bikes, age 5 to 15. The only two rules we have, age 5 to 15, you have to be a city child. Everybody's welcome. Then we'll pull names. The city fire department and police department will pull all the names. And the kids, we're going to start with the little kids first. And they can just pick. We're going to have little boys' bikes separated, little girls' bikes separated, big boys' bikes separated, big girls. And the kids pick out whatever they want.
So you call Joey Smith's name, and he gets to go pick out the little kid's bike. Next name, whoever she is, gets to pick out one, and you just keep going until you don't have any bikes left. Huh?
And what's going to be nice, the Butler City Police have helmets, which Jamie will talk about, and they're going to fit and install the bikes with the kids right at that location, right on the spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We realize the importance of bicycle helmets now. We never had bicycle helmets whenever I was a kid. Jamie, what about you? Did you have a helmet whenever you were a kid on a bicycle?
I almost hate to admit this, but I was terrified to ride my bike as a kid, and I didn't learn to ride my bike until I was 12 years old. But yes, I had a helmet on, but that was for me being very safety concerned. But back in the day, no, helmets weren't as important as they are now. I think with the advancements in the medical community and what we've seen, especially with concussions, it has become very, very predominant to ensure that you have your kids with helmets on. And actually, it's a state law that if you're handing any bicycles out, you need to make sure that a helmet accompanies them. And
did not know that.
Yeah, and the police department has been absolutely wonderful. They're partnered with Kohl's and also with UPMC Children's to provide us all the helmets that we'll have that day, and all the helmets, they'll be sure to get them fitted on those kiddos and make sure that their noggins are safe.
Mm.
And I think we're going to have some flyers on bicycle safety that we were going to be handing out also. But when you were talking about wearing helmets whenever, you know, we were younger, David, I also, a vision came to my mind. You remember whenever we used to also ride people on our handlebars?
True.
Haven't seen that in eons.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I used to be able to carry my baseball mitt, one bat, and another person. All on my handlebars.
Yeah. I guess the handlebars have changed today. You maybe would not want to ride on the handlebars. Not to mention the safety factor.
The helmets are critical now.
Yes.
I wouldn't think of riding my bike without a helmet nowadays. Yeah. And I actually, when I was a kid, one time went over the handlebars of my bike. And, there but for the grace of God, I could easily had brain damage. It was just, I hit the right way, fell and rolled the right way, and got up and, brushed some ashes out of my knee. And
that pedaled was it. On. You yeah. pedaled on, huh?
But, we didn't realize how dangerous it was.
Yeah.
And, they didn't have bicycle helmets back then anyway.
No. And I don't think they had the statistics that they, they started keeping and keeping track of, and especially, a lot of injuries going to the hospital. And as the bicycle injuries increased through the years, that's whenever the awareness for safety also increased, which is a good thing.
Now, you say that the city police are going to help fit these? Did I hear that?
They sure are. They're going to be on hand that day. Not only will they be there representing the police department, we'll have one of the squad cars there. We'll also have canine unit shirts that will be available for sale down there, so if anybody would like to participate with that. And then our officers will also be helping every kid get their helmet adjusted, make sure that they're on for safety.
Here's the deal, folks. If you don't have, and I didn't know this until I got a bicycle helmet, it's pretty complicated inside. There's all kinds of straps and stuff, and I don't know. Mine has styrofoam and padding and all that kind of junk in there. But you really have to piddle around with it a while to make sure that it fits right and it stays on, because they're a little bit awkward if you don't have them on.
Right. And it's very important, too, not only with the helmet, that each child gets a bike that fits them in that, because you don't want too young of a child on too big of a bike, because then you create a hazard in that, too, because they're not able to handle, the bike. So.
Yeah, I forgot all about that. I'm regressing to my childhood now, thinking about the different size bikes. And they still make girls' bicycles and boys' bicycles? I don't anymore, do they?
Yeah,
they do.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of unisex bikes out there as well. But, they definitely still do. We've got Monster High ones and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. So, there's something for everybody. And, hey, I mean, who's to say a little girl doesn't want a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle bike, too? So,
that's something different. We didn't have any mutant turtles back in my
They were either blue or pink.
yeah. No, but the girls' bikes, they were really kind of funny looking, because they were missing one of those structural bars, which is kind of important to hold a bicycle together these days. I think most of them are unisex today.
Yeah.
Don't make such a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, the guy wouldn't be caught dead riding a girl's bike, or vice versa.
No.
It was one of those verboten things.
Dave, Jamie's going to give you some people that have really been wonderful. Want to tell them?
Happen to make this possible?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have had such an outpouring from across the community. So many different businesses have jumped on board, All About Reclaimed on Main Street to International Quality Consultants up on top of the hill. We've even had a lot of just residents that have decided to donate bikes. The McDonald's, the Dewfields, we've had just an outpouring of love in that regard. I've been receiving most of the bicycle donations have been coming in through me. That's kind of the area that I've hashed out a little bit. That's kind of my department. Kathy has been handling a lot of the food vendors that have been coming in, organizing mm-hmm. the monetary donations, and I know she's been just as active with getting those in as well.
Well, just a few phone calls, but we have Domino's Pizza who will be delivering pizzas every hour on the hour.
That's nice.
That is very awesome.
So this is going to take place really most of the afternoon on Sunday, right? This coming Sunday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1 to 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll be there earlier, but it's going to actually start at 1, correct?
It takes a while to give away that many bicycles.
Oh, yeah.
It sure does.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to
pull those names, you know.
Registration's going to open up at 12:30, so if anybody would like to come prior to the 1 o'clock start time, 12:30, we will start opening up the registration.
This is how you get the child's name entered in the drawing, right? They
right.
got to register. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll come up, they'll get registered. Every child will be assigned a number, and that number will be put into the lottery to win the mm-hmm. bikes. And then, as Denny mentioned earlier, we'll have our police and fire that will be there. They'll be pulling names, and you know, as we pull the names, we'll have somebody take the kiddos over and get them to their bike and then get them sized up just right, get their helmets put mm-hmm. on just right. But outside of that, I mean, we've got a lot of other fantastic things going on. The library's getting involved, and Kathy would be the
well,
one.
Well, I'm actually going to be doing story time for it.
Oh, great.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that because, you know, David, I do story time so much up north.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yes.
And with the libraries up north and all of the residents up there, you know me as their librarian, but I don't get an opportunity too much to do it in the city. So I'm very excited about doing story time for our children. At 3 o'clock, Jamie, is that when I'm doing it?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Yes, and I believe we're going to be discussing Froggy and how he rides his bicycle. So I'm looking forward to that.
For a kid of a certain age, this is a benchmark in a young kid's life when you get your first bicycle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's your first taste of, you think it's all the freedom in the world. It really isn't, of course, if you have conscientious parents.
It is the freedom.
It's, hey, you got wheels, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the first time you got wheels. Or bicycle wheels, anyway.
Yeah, get you there faster than walking.
Or those skateboard things, which, by the way, you could put 5 helmets on me and I wouldn't ride one of those. Wouldn't make any difference.
You and me both.
I'd have padding on every part of my body. And
we have some of those for also.
Really?
Scooters.
Scooters is okay. I'm talking about those skateboard things.
Oh, okay.
The skateboards are the electric scooters because my kids fly around on those electric scooters without a... I don't know how they have the balance for it, but I do not possess that quality.
Electric scooters?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Now I know what you're talking about.
I have one of those we're going to give away also.
Yeah, but...
I thought you were going to tell me you have one that you ride around, Danny.
Too fat.
That's how you got here, right, Danny?
I'm too fat.
Oh, my gosh.
All of this happens this coming Sunday, a bicycle rodeo. This is kind of a relaunching for this year of an activity that Denny Ofstein championed for many, many years. Why did you get this started all those many years ago down on the island section of the city?
You mean why?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've been asked that question by a lot of people. Everybody thinks I'm making money. Everybody thinks I'm getting girlfriends by trading bikes for girls and all this kind of crazy stuff. I was married, the girl I was married to, we couldn't have children. We saw the need in a neighborhood that was less fortunate people,
mm-hmm.
and we wanted to do something. And I called Larry Berg, and I said, Larry, we need to fix the playground up. I had phone calls that day, and volunteers, hundreds of people cleaned the place up, paint, all kinds of things donated. The Vietnam veterans came. We bought a new Vietnam veteran for Paul Angert. We got new basketballs, new basketball courts. The high school donated basketballs. The city parks department brought basketballs that people left there. And the girl I was married to was Joyce Kelly, Mike's sister. The kids loved her. She loved them. And we gave a few old bicycles, Raps Bicycle at the shop. Raps Bicycle helped fix a few old bikes. We gave away 10, 20 bikes. Then Through my connections with the Butler Eagle, I got a discount with them. They put an ad in the paper. This radio station, WISR-BUT, WLER, came with live broadcast. Nobody ever charged us for advertising. The Armstrong Cable, Channel 10, the radio station, the Butler Eagle, it was all free. And we put the word out. And people donate bikes daily to me. And they bring them, they leave them. The kids come. Before we decided to do this, I still have been giving bikes away since the bike rodeo in 2007, I believe was the last year. Mm-hmm. And kids come, they know it's a safe place. They want to get a tire, a bike wheel, or frame to fix up. A lot of kids know how to fix these bikes up. And they come with their parents or they come by themselves with their friends. I open up my gate. The kids pick out any bike they want. There's no questions asked. They take it. It's free. They know it's a safe place. Sadly to say, Dave, I'm like the hero for all these little kids because most of these kids do not know who their father is. So I'm like a father figure. And there's other people in the neighborhood are that way. But God's been good to me. And I'll tell you who was the best of all was Mayor Shantz. Mayor Shantz was the mayor for the city of Butler Kids. And we had playgrounds that had directors. We had structured Mitch Hefner, the city councilman. We had all kinds of activities for kids. And Dave, I have to tell you, it's a shame that that has not happened since Mayor Shantz.
One of the problems we faced was a severe cutback in federal funds for those playground directors in the summertime because the city was able to hire them, college students using that federal grant money.
I just want to pass on one last comment. Not to say anything, but the older people donate bikes. Young people do not donate bikes. Every bike has a story. I have given, over the past 20-some years, over 1,000 bikes away free.
Hmm.
And I have now been giving bikes to people's kids that I gave them bikes to when they were kids. And people bring their babies to show me, the neighbor kids.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, but it's sad. You know, I mean, I'm a total stranger, really, but I'm always nice to the kids.
Yeah, and to just kind of add on to that, I mean, I know funding has become a problem with a lot of things that we used to be able to do in the community. But in this instance, what I can definitely say is we have had so many businesses that have jumped on board that have monetarily supplied so many of the necessities that we need for mm-hmm. this event. Thompson Miller Funeral Home, the Geyser Recovery Center, Discover Wellness, even the fire department and the Lions Club, you know, we've had a lot of people really jumping on board because they do understand that we may not federally still have that money coming in, but it's still a necessity to be able to provide that kind of community to our kiddos. And it has been just absolutely amazing and awe-inspiring to see so many jump on board. And, you know, the younger generation, we're definitely doing our thing, too. Yeah. We've got
even as Howard Insurance, Denny, I think Howard Insurance was always a supporter
always. When
you did it. And a phone call and, oh, yeah, absolutely. We have always contributed to that, you know. So we're really getting community support, I think, of all generations that are stepping up.
See, the Bicycle Rodeo name has a pristine reputation. There's never been a scandal. There's never been any money problems. All the food that was always left over went to the community meal churches with Father Harry and Pastor Tim Pop. And one nice thing, we're going to have anti-drug literature. The Geyser Addiction Center has been a tremendous supporter with a major check, and we're going to have religious people there. We're going to have anti-drug people, the Seeds of Hope people are going to be there. It's more than just a bike rodeo. It's going to be a lot of different community organizations. We have a drug problem in the city of Butler, and I think since the bike rodeo has not been happening for a long time, people sort of took it for granted. But right now, Dave, I would think that most families have somebody that they know has a drug problem or trying to get help.
I would say you're right. Everybody's been touched either directly or indirectly.
Somewhere along the line. And I think with the positivity of Kathy Klein, our city council lady, Jamie Lee Gehring, who's very upbeat kind of girl, and myself, the situation with the bike rodeo has been very well known. I think people realize that let's do something positive for a change. If you read the Butler Eagle, Dave, page after page after page of bad news and drug dealers coming in from Philly, Detroit, Pittsburgh, out of state. When would you ever think you had machete people, guys running around with machetes, and all the burning people and killing people? It's terrible. So this is what I would call good news.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And I think that's increasing. I know last year we started up at Institute Hill with the AM Rotary. They redid that playground. They had, for the first time in how many years, a neighborhood night. I can tell you this Friday on Christie Avenue, they're doing a dedication of the new shelter up there, and it is going to be another neighborhood night. So slowly but surely, we're seeing in our neighborhoods more activity in our playgrounds, which is a wonderful thing.
This could spearhead other people to get involved. First of all, I'm 70 years old. Jamie's young, and maybe she can carry it this along in the future. And when people see how positive this is, and here's the real crux of the thing, it's just exactly what you said. When that little child gets his bicycle and has a smile a mile long, and he hops on and he goes like heck down the street, that's what I like.
Yeah, good feeling. I want to go over the details of this again. If you weren't with us at the beginning of our conversation, there's not that many qualifications. This is free bikes for city kids. Must be children who live within the city limits of Butler. The age range is Danny?
5 to 15.
5 to 15. And
everybody's welcome.
Registration opens at, this is this Sunday, by the way, this coming Sunday, at the farmer's market, the Butler City Outdoor Farmer's Market on the island. What is that, Chesapeake Street? That's right, on Chesapeake Street, right? Yeah.
South Chesapeace.
What did I say? It's Race Street, actually.
Of course.
Yeah, it's at the corner of Chestnut. Yeah, of Race and South Chestnut.
Forgive me for misspeaking.
That's okay. It's
Chestnut,
right across from Rotary
not
Park.
Chesapeake. Yeah. Chestnut. Yes, yeah. Of course. my tongue was ahead of my brain, or vice versa. I'm not sure. Three blocks off Main. Registration opens at 12:30 this Sunday, and they'll start giving away the bikes by blind draw. Mm-hmm. They'll be pulling out one at a time the kids' names who have registered from 1 to 5 p.m. And they'll keep drawing until they don't have any bikes left, and it's over 100 already, right? Over 100 bikes.
Yeah, we've had so many amazing donations. We've got tons of new bikes. We've got some gently used bikes as well. There's a great mix, all sizes, all different shapes and colors. There's bound to be something that the kids are going to, you know, really enjoy getting to pick out, and we're trying to make sure we've got something for everybody. And Denny has also extended the offer that if there's a child there that day that does not receive a bike, we will do whatever we can to try and make sure that we get a bike, you know, donated out to them. So we really do just encourage everybody to be down there. It's a great community event. The entire community is involved from one side of town to the other, and it's pretty amazing to see us all coming together and working together so flawlessly.
Yeah,
so
a lot of other stuff there. We mentioned city firefighters and police, Sheriff Mike Sloop, have some people there, face painting by Butler Beauty School.
Mm-hmm. I think an ambulance is going to be there. Well, what I was going to say is for those who are over 15, like myself, you know, if you're not coming for a bike, but you're part of the community and you just want to be a part of something in the community, please come down. We'll have pizza, we have hot dogs, we'll probably have cookies, and we have drinks and wonderful conversation about our community.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah. One last comment. The Salvation Army, the same day, is also having an event for kids. So that building will be open. And
it's right in the same neighborhood,
nice.
Yeah.
It's right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's the nice part about it, Dave. The word free.
Can't beat it with a stick. Never beat the price, huh? Yeah. A couple of notes for our listeners. First of all, it's the first time Jamie and I have had a chance to shake hands since your election victory in the May primary. Jamie Lee Gearing is a candidate for mayor in the city in the fall. So congratulations. Also, Denny, I'm not sure. You and I have talked. We talked quite a bit. But first time maybe we've been face-to-face since you received your much-deserved Community Service Award. So congratulations personally.
Thank you.
And he's not the type of guy to, you know, jump up on the roof and crow about his good work.
Thank you very much.
But much-deserved honor. And Kathy Klein, you've been in your various liaisons on City Council.
Right.
You've been involved in a lot of this personally, although you're now and with the
public safety director, but my first 6 years on council, I was in Parks and Recreation. Yeah. And, you know, I've always seen each department, even though they're their separate departments, we all work together. So even though I am officially director of public safety, for me, it's an easy segue into to stay in Parks and Recreation because there again, it's all about safety.
And by the way, she's a candidate for re-election, by the way.
That's true, yeah.
That is very true.
Kathy Klein, Jamie Lee Gehring, Danny Ofstein. I feel guilty that I mentioned riding another kid on my bicycle handlebars. I shouldn't have brought that up.
We all did it, David.
We're past the statute of limitations, huh?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Can I just mention one other thing, too? If anybody would like to make any additional donations, be it monetarily or be it bicycle or helmets, you are more than welcome to drop anything off at the fire department. They are accepting donations and holding them there for us, so you may stop there. Of course, they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you're working the midnight turn, feel like stopping through on your way home from work, please feel free. They're happy to accept any donations coming in.
A Butler City community event and a great one coming up this Sunday afternoon. Thank you all. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you,
David.
Good to talk with you. We'll take a break, and we're going to be talking with Cliff Rumbaugh in a couple of minutes from the Butler Area Street Machine Association. He's our next guest on the It's Your Turn program today, so stick around. We'll be back with more in just a moment or so.
If you're a dog person, you know how much a dog means in your life. You know how your dog gives you unrestricted love and affection and joy. You also know that the dog can be so comforting at just the right time when you need to be comforted. That's why Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler has O'Shea on their care team. O'Shea is there to provide the comfort and companionship that really helps, but she's only there at your request. Come in and meet O'Shea. You'll see why so many folks want her at the funeral. She creates a calming atmosphere. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Are you looking for a new pharmacy after hearing news of Kmart closing? Celebrating 10 years of pharmacy care to the Butler community, locally owned Institute Hill Pharmacy can fill your prescriptions in just 10 minutes. We take all major insurance plans, stock a variety of over-the-counter medications, and pride ourselves on fast, friendly customer service. And we are excited to offer a $5 off coupon for any transferred prescription from Kmart customers. Some restrictions apply.
Check out Institute Hill Pharmacy on Facebook or stop by their location on East Jefferson Street.
Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Join us on Wednesday, July 12th for Butler Radio Network Night at the Blue Sox game. Rock out to a live performance by Butler's own Lions in America. Play games like Cornhole, Speed Stack, and a little something we like to call Name That Tune. Lots of chances to win some awesome prizes. Kelly Automotive Park, the fun begins at 5 p.m. First pitch at 6:35 p.m. Come on an empty stomach so you can enjoy the Dollar Dog Night. You don't want to miss the summer night of excitement. See you at the ballpark.
Welcome back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program. We have a lot of guests visiting with us today, and that's great. I love it. Takes us a little longer to get everybody seated and mic'd up here, so we apologize for a little bit of a delay. We have guests here from the Butler Area Street Machine Association, and the reason is they're having a pretty big show tomorrow. Let's say hello, first of all, to the president of the association, Terry Hayes. Terry, good to see you.
Thank you. It's nice to see you, too.
Been a long time since we shook hands.
Yeah, a bit.
And it was under different circumstances, I think, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good to see you again. Good to see you. I didn't know you were involved with this organization. That's great.
We've belonged, Dawn and I've belonged since the late 80s.
Hmm. Also with us is Cliff Rumbaugh. He's vice president of the Butler Area Street Machine Association. Cliff, nice to see you here too as well.
Nice to see you, Dave.
Yeah. So we have a big event coming up tomorrow. Terry, what's happening?
Well, it's called the Celebration of Freedom. Originally, we were in the Freedom Celebration with the city.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they dissolved the Freedom Celebration Committee, they let us stay down there, but we couldn't use the name, so now we're a Celebration of Freedom. We have it every year. We usually have anywhere from, depending on the weather, from 95 to 175 cars. And we give out trophies for participation. We give out trophies for best car, best truck, best motorcycle, best of show. And this year we have a new one. We're giving out a Kids' Choice Award. All the kids that are down there get to wear a judge's badge and get to go around and vote for the car that they like.
All right.
And we're going to give out an award that's called the Kids' Choice this year. That's our new thing this year.
Now, where is this all going to take place tomorrow?
We're down at Butler Memorial Park, down at the Lions Club shelter. And actually, they give us from the ballparks down.
I was going to say, if you get into Butler Memorial Park, you'll see where everything is happening.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're there.
This is going to be a pretty big cruise. Have you had this continuously, Cliff, even after the wind-up of the Freedom Celebration? Because that was something that started, oh, gosh, I think it was
97
back
was the first
yeah,
Freedom.
Yeah, a long, long time ago, yeah.
But Mayor Shantz.
You've continued to have the car cruise?
Yes, we continue to have it. Mm-hmm. It's open to the public, and we invite everybody to come out, and it's a great place to meet friends and have a good time.
Is there an admission charge tomorrow?
No.
Yes.
Well, there is for the cars.
I mean, if you're going to enter a car, yeah.
Yes. But that's it.
But if you just want to come down and look around, there's no charge?
It's open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing we ask is that you don't ride bicycles where the cars are. If you bring your bike down to the park, that you park it before you walk in to where the cars are.
There's a pretty good reason for that, I'm guessing.
Sometimes accidents happen and people fall into the cars. And
bicycle falls into a car, big deal.
That, sometimes, yeah.
It can be very costly.
It can be easier than a bicycle. I had a set of golf clubs fall over against my car one time several years ago.
Yeah,
big time damage. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not really cheap. It's not cheap. Now, we had car shows down at the park longer than since 97. We had them several years before that, but we used to have it at the end in front of the swimming pool.
Oh, well, that is back a ways then. Yeah,
the DJ would be on a hay wagon sitting in the back of that. Mm-hmm. So we've been around for over 35 years. And we've been doing car shows and that. Basically what we do is the money that we make, we keep enough to keep the club going, and then the rest of it we give out to charities. Last year we gave out $2,400 in charities. We gave to the food cupboard. We gave to the city's canine corps. We gave to the local disabled veterans because they were trying to get a wheelchair van, and we gave to local cancer research.
Will there be anything else down there other than the cars tomorrow?
There's going to be a basket Chinese auction.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty big, and there's a lot of items there. And
again, proceeds going to your various nonprofit charities.
Right.
So you've been having a good time. And raising some money for charities at the same time.
Well, we do this all summer also. We have probably 20 other cruises that we do. And all of the 50-50 money that we collect from all of our cruises goes towards our charities. And yesterday in Slippery Rock, we had our annual cancer cruise. We have one cruise where all the proceeds are for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And we did almost $900 yesterday collecting for cancer, so...
How long have you been, Cliff Rumbaugh, how long have you been involved with the Butler Area Street Machine Association?
Since the beginning, 36 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And you have a car or cars?
I do, correct. I have a car. You do not have to have a car to belong to the Butler Area Street Machine Association.
Mm-hmm.
We have our meetings the second Wednesday of the month at the
American
Legion at 778 in Lindor.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it is in the Freedom... Victory Room. We just started moving up there. And it is open to the public. If anybody would like to find out about the Butler Area Street Machine Association, they're more than welcome to come up and see what our club is. We are an older club, but you'll find out that we have made a lot of friends over the years, and it's just a good place to meet people and people that have the same interest and hobbies that the reason the club was founded.
I see you have a nice logo on your shirt there, Cliff, yeah. Butler Area Street Machine Association. Now, does that, because I'm not a car buff, I like cars, but I'm not very knowledgeable. I've never refurbished one or anything like that. Does your name signify anything special, a street machine, or is that just a catchy name?
It's what our original founder came up with, the Butler Area Street Machine Association. And it is just what it says. It's a street machine association. You can have antique cars, classics, and hot rods, muscle cars.
So nothing is really excluded by using the term street machine. That's what I was getting
at. Yes, we're not a cruising club. We are a car club. And like I said, the public's more than welcome to come out and see what we're all about. And I think that they find out it's very enjoyable.
What kind of car do you have, Cliff?
I've had several, but the one that I got right now is a 95 Corvette. And I've had older cars that's been much, much older than that, but that's what I have right currently.
You work on them sometimes for years and years to get them into shape?
I have, yes. Finding parts and stuff like that. It's a hobby. It's than anything.
Labor of love, though. Huh?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Some people like to paint. Some people like to draw. Some people like collecting coins. I just like collecting old cars and parts.
What about you, Terry?
We have three.
Three?
Yeah, I have an 86 Dodge 600 convertible. My husband has a 71 Ford LTD convertible. And between the two of us and a friend, Joe Aquavita, we built a 1929 street rod from the ground
up. Get out, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Can you buy parts for a vehicle that's that old, or do you have to manufacture them?
No, there's lots of places. If you have a Model A, you go to Snyder's. If you have a Mustang, you go to Pittsburgh Mustang. If you have a Chevy, you can go anywhere. Hmm. Chevy parts are almost anywhere, you know. And a lot of times, people like AdvanceNet will help you find parts if you have to. Or if you go online and you punch in what kind of car you have, like you have a 72 Chevelle, you put in a Chevelle, and it'll come up with all these different places where you can get parts in that.
Spend a lot of cold winter days and nights in the garage, maybe, tinkering, huh?
Correct.
Makes the winter go by a little quicker when you're working on a car?
Correct.
Or when the husband's out there working on a car.
So do you do everything whenever you're restoring a car? I mean, for example, painting. That's pretty much a specialty, isn't it? Huh?
Some guys in the industry, they will they'll do a lot of their work, and some of us will do what we specifically know how to do. And then the car club does have guys that do painting and stuff like that, and they have painted some of the guys' cars. So our club has a lot of talent. There's a lot of people that are involved in automotive background. And when we need a handout, people come and they help these guys out, especially if it's something that they're trying to get maybe into the Civic Arena, but down to Pittsburgh for the big car show in February.
Well, that's the way they do it, and even the big shows on TV, you know, there'll be guys in a garage that'll do so much, and then they'll send it out to the specialist who does some upholstery work or a particular paint job or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't do everything themselves.
No, they don't. They'll send it out to machine shops or upholstery, like you mentioned, but it's a way of gathering people together and having a good time.
Yeah. It's a social event, and it will be tomorrow as well, will it not, Terry?
A big social event tomorrow. Yeah. But like he said, we're not a cruising club, and this is what he was saying is basically it. People with the same interests together, and there's always somebody to pitch in and help you if you have a problem with your car, that they know how to do something better. We're always coming up with speakers and articles. Anytime there's a change in legislation, like a few years back, they changed the inspection rules for street rods and for antiques and for classics. We make sure that our members have that type of information in front of them at all times and that. So
new members welcome?
New members are
always
welcome.
Yeah.
Yes. And you meet at American Legion 778?
That is correct.
That's
yes.
The top of the hill in Eldora, right where the tank is.
That is correct.
Right.
Yes.
We're in the Victory Room, which is the little room between both buildings. Mm-hmm. And that's.
And when do you meet again?
Second Wednesday of the month at 7:30 our meetings start. And they last about an hour, maybe a little bit longer, depending on what we have going on there. But it's welcome to the public, and you do not have to have a car. But if you have a car, that's great. And you'll find out the Butler Area Street Machine is very family-oriented, and you will enjoy the people that you're with.
Well, that's good to mention.
You just have to have an interest in cars.
Yeah.
And we have events during the year that are just for the club members, too, that, you know, to thank them for being members and for helping us out with all our activities.
Well, listen, drop our newsroom an email every time you're having an event, and we'll be happy to help you publicize it for you. So.
Dave, I'd like to thank you on behalf of the Butler Area Street Machine Association for having us on here, and WISR's management for giving us some airtime. We really do appreciate that.
It's what we do here. I'm glad to see you. Yeah. Hey, folks, don't forget now, this event that we're talking about, it's tomorrow. It's the 4th of July, Independence Day. When is the 4th of July this year? Well, that will be on the 4th of July, yes.
Everybody keep your fingers crossed, no rain.
Tomorrow's supposed to be perfect. I don't want to jinx you.
No. I'm worried about the rain tonight.
Today's a little shaky. Tomorrow's supposed to be absolutely ideal. Mostly sunny, 82.
Yeah.
You won't get it any better than that on the 4th of July. All of this at Butler Memorial Park. You know where that is? It's down in the west end of the city of Butler. You can't miss it.
We'll have signs up.
Yeah, there'll be signs up, and you'll find them. There'll be a big crowd there. What are the hours again, Terry, tomorrow?
Registration's from 9 to noon. The car show is from 12 to 4. Trophies and Chinese auction, and that will be at 4.
So stop down, and, you know, if you're having a picnic or doing something else, stop down for an hour or two. You'll be most welcome.
Oh, yes.
Tomorrow afternoon. Hey, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Nice to have you both here today. They're both, in fact, it's the top two officers, folks, in the association. Terry Hayes is the president. Cliff Rumbaugh is vice president of the Butler Area Street Machine Association. Tomorrow afternoon, they'll be set up with a huge car show down at Butler Memorial Park. We need to take a break. Our final guest will be joining us in a couple of minutes. He's Sten Morgan, so please stick around. More to come on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 96-96. The pick 3, 056-056. The pick 4, 5672. And the pick 5, 82976. Wild ball for each of those is 4. The treasure hunt is 4, 21, 22, 26, and 28. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Going to be talking, listeners, by the way, on this segment of It's Your Turn. Nice to have you with us. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Sten Morgan. We're going to be talking about success, specifically 7 Mindsets of Success, a new book published by Sten Morgan. Mr. Morgan, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me.
7 Mindsets of success. We better start out with the basics here. What's a mindset? How do you define that?
For me, a mindset is really the way we interpret and react to the world around us. I feel like this is really developed for all of us starting at a really young age, and most of us aren't aware of it. And the most successful people are the most aware of it and develop healthy mindsets that make all their decisions more effective. I grew up kind of in a difficult situation, and took probably until my mid-20s to realize I had quite a few unhealthy mindsets that were really impacting every decision I made and holding me back. And so I spent a lot of time focusing on correcting that. And as I did, success quickly followed.
Listeners, Sten Morgan, when he talked about being in his mid-20s, that wasn't all that long ago. He's still a young man. He's one of the country's youngest elite financial advisors, graduate from Linfield in Oregon, studied finance and economics, and you've been working at an investment firm since the beginning of your career, right?
I have been, yeah. I worked for a couple different groups, and then at 25 I broke off and started my own group called Legacy Investment Planning. But the way I grew up, it really comfort was kind of my main goal. We had 3 sisters, a single mom, and I think at some point discomfort can drive you to overcome things, but ours had been so uncomfortable for so long. My goal in life was to get a steady job and never leave. But as I started realizing my full potential, I think I was capable of more than that. I had to really change the mindsets I had to allow myself to take a risk and really pursue the success I thought I was capable of.
Well, your success at a relatively young age, very young age, Stan, kind of flies in the face of the stereotype that a lot of people have of millennials, of your generation. Now, I realize they're generalizing, they're painting with a broad brush, but a lot of people think millennials don't have much ambition, don't have much drive, right?
Yeah, my initial reaction is defensiveness to that for my peers, but if I was to honestly sit back and evaluate, and I have, there's truth to the stereotype, unfortunately. And so my goal is, I talk to entrepreneurs, people coming out of college, is to say, here are things you need to be aware of. I think there was a generation of parents that worked really hard, struggled a lot, and they overcompensated by maybe covering their children too much, providing too big of a safety net if their kids ever failed, so really taking risk out of their life. And so I believe these mindsets, because I didn't have them, healthy mindsets originally, they're transferable. And so if I can get a hold of kids going into college or out of college, or young entrepreneurs, or really people later in their careers that are stuck, and say, this is the way you need to think, because the path to success can look different, but the mindsets are the same, my hope is and my goal is that message will wake people up.
So you would actually suggest, if people realize that they've had a safety net, that it might not be a bad idea to get rid of it?
I would, yeah. I think you have to be responsible about that decision. If you're married and you have kids, that decision, of course, is harder than if you're just a single person in their 20s taking on a big risk. But I think what I've tried to learn from is the people that are 80 or 90 and reflecting on their lives and saying, I wish I would have done this, I wish I would have done that. And most of those people are saying the same things. And I think a lot of people are going to continue to have the same regrets. And a lot of times it's, if your grandchild jumps on your lap and asks you, Grandpa, Grandma, what's the greatest risk you ever took, are you going to tell them about the time you started your own business or pursued your own dream, or are you going to tell them somebody else's story? And so for me, that reflection and kind of that future self, which is one of the chapters in the book, was compelling enough to me to say, I don't want to have those regrets. I want to do something about it now.
One of the interesting things, I have a review copy of your book in front of me here. We're chatting, listeners, with Sten Morgan, author of 7 Mindsets of Success. One of the interesting things you talk about in here is to that a lot of people try to control too much of their life without realizing that only a certain portion of it is actually within your control.
Yeah, a very small portion, unfortunately. Yeah, I grew up, had multiple father figures come in and out of my life, and as a result of that, I had a chip on my shoulder a lot. I played sports in college, but I was the guy, the hothead, that couldn't really control myself and felt like any authority figure out there was really out to get me. And again, it took me years, and I had an unhealthy mindset for a long time that held me back. But when I realized these people that came in and out of my life, I had no control over that. I didn't cause it. So why am I spending most of my time of my life fighting that and being upset at that, when a lot of times those people probably are moved on and really don't think about it as much as I do? So it was really, can I start focusing on the 10% of things I can control and therefore be that much more effective every day? And that's easier said than done. It took a lot of soul searching and focus. But we've all had hard stages of our life. We've all been negatively impacted by other people's choices around us. So it definitely doesn't discount anybody's story or struggle, but it's really just calling it out and saying, well, let's not let that control our lives.
I don't have to tell you, Sten Morgan, that there are lots of business self-help books out there. Why does your book, 7 Mindsets of Success, why is it different from other business self-help books?
I think my goal, one, it's coming from me. I've read great books out there where it interviews a lot of successful people, and it's kind of just a summary of other people's successes. My hope with the book is to be very open and vulnerable, which doesn't come natural to me, to say, I wasn't successful. Essentially, my life, everything said I shouldn't have been successful. There was a point to where I thought success just didn't happen to people like us. And in a very short period of time, I was able to change that and do something in our industry that arguably has never been done before the age of 30, and to be one of the top 40 under 40 financial advisors at the age of 30. Most people say, well, hey, great for you. You probably had family money or somebody really helped you out. And I came to Nashville with 0 clients, 0 family money, and just had to start over. So the goal is to say you can actually do it at a young age, and that's why we coined the phrase rapid top-level success, is that for the millennials, for other people out there, you don't have to wait 20 years to do it. You can do it in a short period of time, but you have to do it the right way, and it's really about the way you think.
Can you apply these mindsets to other aspects of your life as opposed to just your career, to work? What about other aspects?
That's a great question. Yeah, that's the way we wrote it, I think, because success is defined differently for all of us. And we've all met somebody in our life at one point that it seems like everything they did well, or they saw success, whether they were a successful parent, business owner, friend. And the hope of the book is, again, to say, if you can think the right way and approach things the right way, it's not just about being successful in business and making a lot of money, because that may not be your goal, but these mindsets, once you're aware of them and once you can constantly correct them and improve them, they'll make you more successful in everything you do.
One of the big problems a lot of people face, I could certainly personally empathize with this, is not being able to manage time well. Mm. You say that is crucial.
It is, yeah, I think. Because, again, growing up the way I did, not having a father figure, and since then I've kind of reunited with my father, and we have a great relationship, which is an amazing blessing. But I realized I needed to learn how to be more intentional with my time. I want to get home at 5:30 to be with my daughters. And a lot of times when I tell people my story, they say, man, he must work 7 days a week and not really have any balance in his life. But when I say I'm home at 5:30 and rarely work on the weekends, that surprises people. But in order to accomplish that, I need to be able to do in 8 hours what most people take 12 to accomplish. And so it's about planning your day ahead. It's about intentional time, not just time.
Tell us a little bit about the structure of your book, Sten Morgan, Seven Mindsets of Success. How do you approach it?
So really it's about setting the foundation of what is a mindset. Why is the way we think so important? Because most of us are just passively going through life. We try to develop skill sets to be better at certain tasks or certain jobs that we're in. But we don't spend enough time thinking about how is our mind interpreting struggles in our life or adversity, or how do we pursue discomfort? Because all of us are impacted by this on a daily basis. From there, we say, here are seven different mindsets that grow off each other that don't have to be all addressed at once, but you may read the seven mindsets and say, hey, these two, great, these come natural to me, or these three I really struggle with. I didn't know that when it comes to discomfort, whenever I see a challenge, I run the other way. Oh, but greatness doesn't happen when you're in your comfort zone. And so there's seven mindsets, but they can be taken and addressed, and I would recommend that one at a time.
Can you list the seven mindsets for us that you discuss, obviously, at some length in your book?
You bet. So first mindset's future self. Then you have remove your safety net.
Which we talked about a little bit, yeah.
Yep. Perspective. Circumstances. Chapter 5 is discomfort. 6 is conflict. And then 7 is time balance.
Any suggestions for we are into midsummer now, but there's still a lot of college grads who are looking to get their career started. Any tips for them, Stan?
Yeah, I'd say read this book. Learn more about the way you think and what your goals are. I feel like college is really about get the degree, get some kind of job, and then a lot of kids are taking their 20s, maybe even a full 10 years to figure out who they are, what they want, what they think success is. And if I would have had this information before I got into college, I would have been able to be much more intentional. Fortunately, I picked my career path early and achieved that success, but I have peers that are in their 30s that are just now saying, you know, this is really what I want to do, and oh, by the way, it requires more education, and there was a lot of time and money wasted. So I'd say focus on a skill set, because the skill set's important, but don't overlook the mindset, because the most successful people we all know and throughout history, they knew how to think. They were really self-aware, and they had healthy mindsets.
And don't look for shortcuts. You point that out as well, Stan.
I do. But I, when I say don't look for shortcuts, that doesn't mean it has to take a long time to be successful. You can have quality success. It won't happen in a year, but that's why I more lay out that 3 to 5 year window, that if you do it the right way, you can achieve rapid top-level success, and it can be quality success too.
He's the author of Seven Mindsets of Success, what you really need to do to achieve rapid top-level success. And he's a millennial success story himself. Sten Morgan has been our guest. Sten, nice to meet you. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Nice to talk to you today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, we thank our earlier guests on the program today. Peter Anno, wonderful to talk about him and his trip to Antarctica and many other places around the world. Quite the world traveler and marathon runner. He's a Harmony guy. Yeah, originally from Harmony. Also, guests on the program today, Kathy Klein, Jamie Lee Gearing, Denny Opstein visiting with us on the program today, and along with Cliff Rumbaugh and Terry Hayes. So a lot of folks. I love it when it's that way. Tomorrow, no live guests. It's a holiday edition of It's Your Turn. We'll be taking a second listen to some of the interviews, some of the more recent interviews we've done in the past. Later in the week, we'll be talking with Penn State Extension. All folks from Musical Theater Guild will be with us later in the week. They are about ready to raise the curtain on their summer show, and it's a wonderful show. It's a funny, warm show. Nonsense. Nonsense. It opens mid-July, and we'll get all the details later in the week from folks from MTG.